Hey there, it's Vicky here from Online Marketing Basics for Busy Website Owners, and welcome to this episode of the podcast, which is part of a series we're running at the moment called Inside the Business, where I'm talking to real ordinary folk who are running businesses and talking about their day-to-day challenges about doing that, no matter where they are, and in particular, to the online space. We've had some great guests this series so far, and today's guest is no exception. She's actually been on the podcast before. It's our friend Colette Stevenson, who, when she joined last time, was here to chat all about great website design. And if you've listened to the episode, you'll recall that I tried to make Colette laugh and freak out in equal measures by showing her some great and awful website design. But this time Colette's back because she's launched a business in 2021. And I was lucky enough to be able to chat to her at the end of the summer, just before she launched her business, PosterGrid, in early September 2021. You'll hear all about the launch of PosterGrid and actually what PosterGrid is as well, plus find out a little bit more about what led Colette to launch this business this year. And it was also a really good chance for me as well to find out a little bit more about Colette's background as a serial entrepreneur, a serial business owner, although she definitely doesn't class herself as that in this episode. As usual, grab a notebook. I'm sure you're going to pick up some hints and tips. But more importantly, I think you'll just really enjoy hearing a refreshing take on what it takes to launch a business in 2021, especially if you're like Colette when you didn't mean to and it's a bit accidental. All right, I'll see you in just a sec. Would you like to reintroduce yourself to the audience? Because you are a friend of the podcast and mine as well. And let everyone know who you are and what your business is.
Hi, I'm Colette, Colette Stevenson. And I'm really happy to be here again because I love talking to Vicky. And I call myself a brand designer. And what that means is I help people create a visual presence of their brand, a visual representation of their brand online in a way that makes them memorable to their audience. So that's what I do. And at the moment, or over the last year, I've been specializing in doing that on Instagram with something called PosterGrid, which is where we transform people's brand and content into a seamless poster that goes on and on and on and on and on. And in September this year, we will be teaching people how to do that for themselves and developing the business in a way where we can also provide that to people who don't want to do it for themselves.
Let's just step back a little bit, because last time we spoke, you were definitely, I wouldn't say just a designer here, but you know, you definitely wasn't a business owner.
No.
When we chatted last, we were talking about design advice for small businesses. Mm. What happened between when we last spoke and now? Like, did you have this in the back of your mind? Did you accidentally wake up one night with the idea? Have you been plotting this for years? What's been going on?
Mix of all of the above. So I developed this system in summer last year because I hated Instagram, to be perfectly honest. I couldn't get it to work for me. No matter what I did, everything looked terrible. And as a designer, I needed it to not look terrible. So I wanted something that would A, look good, but B, not look like all the other designers out there. Right. There's a lot of people out there who do graphic design and brand design who tend to use very similar styles, because it works, right?
It totally works. Totally. And you can go into Canva and see all of those posts that yes. people are using, right? Yep.
Yeah. So I wanted to do something that was different and experimented with the idea of making something seamless, which had been in the back of my mind for quite a long time. And I wanted to make it work in a way that it would just keep going without me having to keep reinventing the wheel or plan ahead.
What does that mean, keep going then? If you can sort of verbalize it fairly honestly. Yeah,
so if you go into like one of those apps where you like put in a picture and it slices it up and it gives you so many rows, it might give you 3 rows of content, it might give you 12 rows of content, but then it ends and then you've got to do it again. And so then you end up with like kind of blocks of content that don't feed continuously and infinitely. It's hard to explain in an audio.
The first sort of experience I had of the type of app that you're talking about is literally to create a poster, right? I downloaded some software onto my PC computer many, many years ago. And you could load an image in and it would expand the image to be fit across 9 A4 pages. And then you could print this image out in nine different pictures and then stick them together to create a massive poster for your wall.
Yeah. Right?
So that's like a type of kind of grid maker, isn't it? The one you're talking about is like commonly you'll see them on Instagram feeds where they're not just like pictures that are together in a grid format. They're kind of puzzle grids is one of the
that kind of thing
where all of the images cleverly link together. Like maybe there might be like a stray bit of graphic design hovering from the top of one grid into the other, and that's kind of what creates that sort of seamless effect, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I wanted to do that, but I wanted to do it so that it didn't just end.
So it's infinite, basically.
So it's infinite, but I also wanted it to be easy because I know myself well enough to know that if it was too much, effort and not fun to do, I just wouldn't maintain it. And I wanted to maintain my Instagram presence because it's a visual platform and I provide a visual service.
Okay. So you were working as a designer, but you've turned this into a business.
Yeah.
So what's kind of the difference between just doing this as a service for your existing clients and maybe some new ones that are coming along, and then actually like making this into a thing where it's got its own website, its own online presence, you've got to drive traffic to it, there's products coming from this. Like, why take that next step? What was the incentive for you?
Oh, lots of incentives. It needed to happen and I wanted it to happen. And it was kind of when I realized that what Poster Grid could do, I then wanted to try and find a way to sell it that wasn't just me working one-on-one with different clients, because it was A, limiting for the client, and B, limiting for me. And I knew that it could be more. But I wasn't, to be honest, I wasn't 100% sure how to transition from being a freelance designer into owning a business. So I sought advice. So I went on Clubhouse quite a lot and chatted to people, won some prizes along the way.
What did you win?
I won some sales courses, actually. I've won so many sales courses.
handy.
I went into quite a few Clubhouse rooms.
What was it about Clubhouse that...
Well, it was January and it was new for me at the time.
Oh, okay. So it was the hot potato.
There was novelty value, but also on Clubhouse. There's a lot of businesses on Clubhouse. And there's a lot of people who are not businesses too on there. But generally, when people want to find out more information, the first place they go to is Instagram. So what was happening was that I'd be on Clubhouse and I'd be chatting, just having a conversation like I am now with you. And it was, you know, there was nothing necessarily profound coming out of my mouth, but people would go and check my Instagram and then people were like, wow, I want to work with you. Right.
Right.
So I was like,
Because they saw the Poster Grid in action,
And I wasn't selling Poster Grid at the time. I was selling brand design services. Mm-hmm. But it convinced people enough that I took my business seriously enough, that I was professional enough. I suppose I wasn't just dumping out reels left, right and centre. There's nothing wrong with reels. I love reels. But I wasn't just dumping out random content with no purpose. And I think the thing people forget about with the Instagram grid is that it's evergreen, right? So you can technically put out reels daily and stories daily and do all of that stuff and keep your online and be very, very visible daily on Instagram, but your grid can be your evergreen content and you can put out quite powerful content and just leave it sitting there. And people will come and see it and be like, wow, this is great. And they want to be in your world for longer. And that's what started to happen. So I was like, right, I've got to find a way to sell this. So I did a sales course. And this one I paid for. And it was with Helen Pritchard and Pete Scott. And I think you were there, weren't you? You were
It was very good.
It was good. It was. And on the third day, it was, you know, ask your questions. So I was like, right, well, I'll ask, how can I sell this? Right. Because I knew that I didn't want to sell it as just a one-on-one service. Because if I did that, it would take a lot of time per client, which means that obviously it needs to be priced quite highly because it takes a lot of time. And I could only do so many clients at a time, which meant that I couldn't scale it. And I wanted it to scale. So I guess really that was the first time I saw my services as a business rather than just as something I would do for other people.
Okay. So this enlightenment about your time being limited, had you ever thought about that when you were a designer?
Yes, frequently. Okay.
Right. And so it was definitely on your mind that you were going to cap out your earnings because you've only got 40 hours in a week or whatever, right?
Yeah, it's actually less because I'm parenting.
Oh, okay, right. So a common story.
In terms of, I mean, obviously I can work at night and I can work on weekends. So.
But that's not normal.
We shouldn't normalize that. And it's that whole, in terms of the amount of hours I had to work with clients, that was quite limited. When you're running your business, obviously you're doing your marketing, you're doing your website, you're doing your all your other things, plus your family life. So the hours that you've actually got to be generating an income are quite limited when you're doing a service, particularly for service-based businesses. And so this was weighing heavily on my mind because my income was severely limited and I was struggling to grow it. So I knew I needed to find a way. And it just so happened that I knew I had a product that I could use. And I think that was the difference, really. I didn't have a service anymore. I had a product. I saw my design skills or my design methods, not as something that I would just do for people as a service. It was something that I could provide as a product. But I didn't know how to sell it. So on that call, when I asked my question, I got a text from Helen offering to mentor me in exchange for a percentage.
And that sounds like classic Helen there. So love that. How exciting. So that for you means that you have the kind of insight and support to be able to do things in your business that perhaps you don't know how to do or wouldn't know where to start, right?
Yes, very much. And I think we realized early on that I'm actually quite clueless about a lot of things.
Okay. I mean, by the way, totally normal. So like, just for people listening, like what are the things that you have experienced about setting up a new business that you didn't know before?
Right. So this is kind of interesting for me because I've set up quite a few businesses. Now I know why they weren't working.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe give us examples then. Compare what went wrong before.
Right. So I one of the businesses I set up was an English teaching service where I would teach corporate managers in corporations in Japan to give English presentations and speak in English, basically.
Corporate English training.
Corporate English, that was it. Thank you. Yeah, I don't know how I could have been an English teacher when I can't even think of words myself, but there you go. I got a very big client very early on and let them be my income. and didn't actually go and source any other clients at all. I just let that contract run its course and was like, all right, bye. And that was the end of that business.
So literally you had all your eggs in one basket. The basket left. You couldn't find any cash to replace the revenue.
And to be honest, I wasn't interested enough. It sounds ridiculous, but I'd gone into business with the sole intention in that case of generating money. And mostly I just wanted to make the resources. See, I just wanted to do all the design stuff.
And make all
the plans and create all the lessons and make everything look lovely without actually having to do the business side of things. And everything.
So, I mean, that sounds like a freelancer though.
It does, doesn't it? So
not that you had a business.
But I was in partnership with someone. We had, very good contract. We did a lot of stuff that could have become a business.
Yeah.
Had I focused on growing the business, not running the service. And I think that was the key difference. I also had a school. In the school, it was okay. I had accountants, I had staff, by all outside appearances, I had a business, I had a school, bricks and mortar school, customers, we had people paying monthly. So all that was great. But again, I got caught up in the wanting to deliver a service.
The training
and making all the resources rather than running the business side of things. And so as soon as there was a wobble in the road, as soon as there was a problem, in this case, an earthquake and a tsunami.
Quite a big wobble, that one.
Yeah, that was a big wobble. But as soon as that happened, I didn't have the sticking power to ride it out. I hadn't committed to my business, if that makes sense.
Mm.
I just hadn't made the commitment to it. I was afraid to commit to it because I knew I would need to look at the books and look at the numbers and do the things, like be more visible. I had to do more to make it more, and I wasn't prepared to do it. In short. And
did you ever look at the numbers though?
No.
Oh, really? Okay.
No.
How long did that business last?
About 18 months.
Okay. Do you know most businesses only last about 18 months?
Yes. Yeah. And the only reason it didn't last, in all honesty, was because of me and because I didn't commit to it.
It's quite interesting, right? Because a lot of businesses start because of the first example that you talked about where, someone says, I'll pay you for your thing. And then, naturally, like relationships in that case sort of last around a year to 18 months.
Yeah.
So if you haven't like got into a cycle of bringing in more leads and converting those leads, the business is going to peter out, right?
Yeah.
Also, the stamina that business owners have of actually like being able to grow a business and not be paid money in the beginning, and then overcome that initial hurdle. It's quite a big hurdle. I say it's the biggest one in your business's life, is that sort of beginning stage. And the energy just runs out by that time. So a lot of businesses typically fizzle out around 18 months. Yeah. So that doesn't surprise me. And I think that's quite normal as well. Yeah,
it was quite normal. I mean, I kept trying. I set up a cafe with my husband.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I had no desire to run a cafe.
I'd like to run a cafe, but I'd like to run one of those cat cafes like you see in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
And just have my cat and some other cat friends in there. That would be a dream for me.
Mm. Well, you see, it's nice to imagine running a cafe. But like, I liked being able to have nice coffee in the morning, come downstairs, because we lived upstairs. And so we'd come downstairs and we'd have like fresh roasted beans and we had an espresso machine and we had a really nice kitchen. So there was lots of really good stuff about it. But running a cafe is hard work and it's exhausting. And unless you love it, there's no point.
No, and there's no profit either.
No.
The markup is so little.
You need a lot of customers coming in all the time to generate an income. And this was a seasonal cafe in a ski resort.
Oh. Right. So yeah.
So like, we only had one season to make money, and I was already tired anyway. I didn't want to live in Japan anymore, and so there was a lot of things there. But again, it was that level of commitment. We weren't committed to the business. We'd already kind of decided. We'd already decided when we took it on a get out clause in a way. Well, if it doesn't work out, we'll do this.
So you never really committed to it?
No. It was the same with everything, just never really committed to it. And I committed to design I tried to commit to design in 2019, then bottled out of it. But it was last year I committed to doing design. And then the beginning of this year, I promised myself that I would grow a business in some way that was not just me doing things for people for bits of cash here and there. I wanted to generate an income. I wanted a revenue stream. I wanted more than one revenue stream, and I wanted to be able to rely on it. And
okay,
that was a decision.
I like that.
I'm not there yet, I'll be honest, but
no. Well, we'll talk about that in a sec, but like, you know, is that because you want to make good for the businesses that perhaps didn't work? Have you always had a bit of an entrepreneurial flair to you?
Yeah, I hate jobs.
Right.
I love working, but I hate having a job.
Mm.
I don't mind having a job when I can be the boss. Mm. or when I've got some element of creative control. But it's one of the reasons I quite like teaching, because you know you're the boss of the classroom and you've got a lot of creative control about how you're going to present information and what information you're going to be presenting. So all of that's fun. But actually, I just don't like having a job. I don't like being told when to work, when to have holidays. I hate the fact that my income is decided by somebody else and my value is decided by somebody else. So my first freelance work, I was about 16 and I was an actor. So it's just been something I've always done. I've always flopped between having a job and being self-employed in some way. And my longest employment was being an English teacher in Japan. But after 5 years, I quit and became self-employed. And along came all the businesses after that.
So what have you taken from your experience then as an entrepreneur? Because that is what you are. I'm sorry, we've got to label you, and we are doing that because you've set the businesses up. Anyone listening to this would probably agree with me. What lessons are you going to apply to what you're doing with PosterGrid then at the moment?
The biggest one is to just commit, to commit to myself and to commit to the concept, and ride through every wobble, every shake, every doubt, every moment where I want to curl up under the duvet and hide away, and to just push through it all and keep learning and accept the fact that I'm going to keep making mistakes and that I don't know. There's an awful lot that I don't know, but that there are a lot of people, you included, who I can ask, I can say, oh, how do I do this, right? Or I can read a book, or I can go on YouTube. I can find the information that I need to know. I don't need to know everything now to make it work. And the good thing about fortunately agreeing to go into business with Helen is that she is a business person. So a lot of the stuff that I don't know, she's already got in place. So that just makes that side of things a little bit easier. I'm not having to think about all of the nuts and bolts all at the same time. I can be learning about them.
Well, what are the nuts and bolts that you have, as it were, that you've encountered that perhaps you've struggled with so far?
Not so much struggle, but been eye-opening. One of them was an early finance meeting where they did projections, even though we had no income, right?
Yeah.
There was no money coming in yet because we'd only just started, right? So there was nothing happening. But they made projections. They actually looked, you know, at the first quarter.
Yeah.
What the minimum level we need to bring in order to survive to the quarter beyond.
Yeah.
So, and I was like, oh, that just makes so much sense. And to anyone who's actually a real business person, they're probably like, well, obviously. But
I think that's normal.
But for somebody who keeps trying to have a business and not actually understanding what a business is, it's like, oh my God, that just makes so much sense. Why did I not see it before? I need to understand the minimum I need to make in the next quarter so that I can survive the following quarter. It just, I've never seen that before.
I think that's, Brent, to be fair to you, right? And you know, I have seen this quite a lot over the years. People have come to either work in businesses I've helped run or in my own business as well, or the people I talk to in my own community and in the Supercharger website membership, is that when you are the business, right, when you do the thing or do the do, you just wake up every day and do it. You don't think about what's going to happen in 3 months, 6 months. You just kind of hope things carry on as they're going.
Or get better. Right?
You're like, or get better.
Something's going to turn around. Someone's going to pay me big money soon.
But also that's because, you know, like if you've been in a corporate career or worked for someone else where all of that stuff is just looked after, and basically they say, we can afford to pay you X amount, this is the task we need you to do. You know, you never, ever, ever have to think about that world at all. You never have to think about cash flow, invoicing people, chasing up invoices to make sure you've been paid, getting finance to cover your cash flow issues, thinking about trends, thinking about competition, thinking about risk analysis and all of those things. By the way, if you're listening to this, I'm just mentioning all these things and Colette's looking at me like, oh. Yeah,
I just wanted to crawl under the table.
I mean, like, I'll confess something to you, Colette, because we're friends, right, is that I, as you know, I used to sit on the board at an agency, quite big independent one, based in London, and I could follow all of the finance stuff. At some point, I even got called commercial director for a little bit, right, because I was meant to kind of look at overall, like, the client accounts that were coming in and see where we could get more cash out of them and stuff. But there was just this phrase that kept being bandied around all the time, EBITDA, EBITDA, EBITDA. And when we do this with the EBITDA, and everyone around the table was looking, nodding like that. And I sat on the board, right? And I was like, and I was the only woman, and I was very young compared to everybody else. And I just had to do the nodding face, like, yes, EBITDA, yes. We're going to Google immediately after the meeting, what the hell is EBITDA? And luckily, the top Google search is EBITDA meaning. And it's basically like the earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation. It's like an accounting thing. God. Still don't understand it, by the way. Have no idea. Have no idea. Like, went through mergers and acquisition chats, and the whole time I was like, so I feel like I feel like there's sometimes just a lot of flannel when it doesn't need to be. I kind of just want to pick up on one of the things you were saying about like getting out of doing the doing, right? Because that's kind of like, we've recognized some finance might not be your jam.
No, right? It's not my jam.
And
you still need to keep on top of it, though. I have a whiteboard, I have my targets, I've got things marked off, I can see where I'm up to at a glance.
Oh, I mean, that's really powerful for small businesses. I mean,
I never did it before.
I mean, I can't recommend enough, like, even just getting a simple Google Doc and putting January to December in one column, and then putting how much you'd like to earn just to pay your own bills, right? And then putting in a figure that, you know, is perhaps just a little bit above that. And then you work towards it. And when you don't, you go through the process of questioning yourself and thinking, well, why didn't I do that? And it helps you understand where there might be gaps and issues in your business. For example, mine has always been not invoicing on time, because I'm like, good guy, Vicky. I'm like, hey, I'll invoice you next. What? Insane. Absolutely insane. No idea why I was allowed to be in control of my own invoicing for so long. Because, you know, when I work for someone else, I invoiced on time, and I used to do the credit control chasing up as well. But now I have an amazing accountant and an amazing bookkeeper and a brilliant virtual assistant who do all of those things for me, because it's not my it's not my zone of genius, because I don't want to have those conversations, right, with people. I want to be good guy Vicky, right? Going, hey, I'm going to do your thing.
I think that's an important thing as well. It's recognizing in your business which bits you really shouldn't
totally.
Do yourself.
100%. You can't do all the things. Yeah. And no one's going to give you a medal for doing all the things in your business as well. I mean, I recall having a conversation with someone who does her own VAT returns. I was like, why do you do it? Just give it to a bookkeeper or an accountant to do. But it just takes her away from doing the day-to-day
of
her business.
Yeah.
Other things I find I'm doing, and I definitely 100% shouldn't be doing in my own business, is it's always the way, isn't it, doing my own Canva posts.
But they're fun.
The waste of time. I mean, I don't do my own customer service. I outsource that, like, at the beginning of this year. I have someone on my team who does that, because again, what it does is it removes me from saying yes to everyone and giving away products, because I want to be Vicky good guy, right? And actually just be able to put myself in the place of being like the owner of my membership and like, you know, the sort of direct, more senior person in my business. Because when you do all the things in your business, when you're the person that sends the invoices and chases the invoices, your clients can't differentiate between the two of them. And then they think they can DM you, whereas you want to shake them upside down for money, you know, there's two different
it complicates the relationship for everybody. It's everything cloudy and everything murky, and it's just easier to keep things.
So how are you getting out the doing? Because I'm luckily very self-aware, and I also have the support of, you know, a brilliant mastermind group I'm in, who can pick on me and pick out and point out issues. Plus, I also go to my parents for business advice, because they are entrepreneurs long. So I can always like pick their brains and get their ideas. And then, you know, me and my husband also, like, because we both look after his business, like swap ideas. But what are you doing to get out of your business from doing the doing?
I'm very much at the beginning of that journey. I'm feeling like I need to do everything, and I'm feeling like anything that I don't know about is a failure on my part. I know that this is not healthy, and it's been a big source of a major internal wobble that I've been having. If somebody says, what's happening with this? If I don't know the answer, I'm like, oh my God, how can I possibly be running a business if I don't know the answer? And then I think that I'm, you know, doing everything wrong, and I let the whole world is crumbling and falling down. So I've had to realize that it's actually okay to actually not know what's going on. I have, very fortunately right now, you know, a team of people who are helping with lots of different things. And at the moment, my job is to each morning check in with everyone and say, hi, this is where we're up to. And then let everybody do the thing that they're meant to do without actually asking any questions right now. I just focus on what I'm doing, and nobody is allowed to ask me any questions either.
So you're actually going through the sort of management enlightenment, really, of like learning how to manage and get the best out of a team without them upwardly delegating to you, basically.
Yeah, and I do have a tendency to kind of want to do it as well.
I
just have to let go of.
Yeah, because also as well, like the thing is, like, the beauty of when a business goes really well is when you hire an expert who knows more than you.
That's the dream.
Yeah, who knows more than you, and they're so good at what they do, and it might make you feel a bit stupid, but it doesn't matter, right? Because you ain't an expert in that, you know. And I've hired plenty of like UX specialists, designers, developers. Oh my God, you know me, I'm like a Renaissance woman that never became the full-on expert, right? But I've happily worked with some amazing experts. What you end up becoming is really good at managing those people and getting them to communicate to you about your business, and getting the best out of them for your business. So I can say I've seen this happen to many a person whilst running the agency in the past. And I'm excited for you. I feel like when it hits, you're going to be bossing it, Colette.
Yeah, we'll see. That's the goal, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm excited. And I do have quite a big vision for the future.
What's coming up then? Tell us about it.
Well, first off is launch number one. First off is to just get PostGrid out in the world and figure out what's working, what isn't working, what we can change, what we can improve on, and make sure that everyone who does it comes away just feeling like they can't believe that they've done what they've done. So that my vision right now is that anyone who comes through PostGrid gets to the end of the course and looks at what they've created and can't believe that they've created it. That's what I want.
So you're basically training other people to do the PostGrid method initially.
Yes. And then they will go, oh my God, I can do that. And I'm not a designer. So that's number one. But number two is to create a business whereby we can do PostGrid for other people. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hire designers who are better than me to design grids for clients. That is the goal, so that clients who don't want to do it themselves or have a bigger budget or want to, you know, go all in and get a fully branded immersive PostGrid, they can do that because we'll have the tools, the resources, the people to be able to do that for them. And then there's more as well, which I'm not going to reveal all now, but there's a lot
exciting.
More
that, yeah. I love this. I mean, this is what a classic leader, right, should be doing, right? You should have a vision. Mm. You should help be encouraging people to get on the bus, right, and come with you down this path. And you don't know what it's going to look like, and it's going to be bumpy along the way, right? But, you know, every company needs that person, not necessarily an integrator, like a doer, because anyone can be a doer in a business. Some people are really good at doing. I thought that was my journey. I thought my path was being a doer for many years, being, you know, the support person to an MD. Until I realized I've got a vision. I want to do that as well.
It's the vision. And then it's all the things that go in with the vision. Like, you've got the vision. So how do you then communicate that vision?
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to make that vision clearer? What can I do to enhance that vision? What can I do to take that vision further than my own vision? And it's that I find really exciting. It's that idea that there is an idea that is bigger than what I can currently see. And to get to that point and to just keep, I suppose, not shining a spotlight, but illuminating a future that is bigger than I'm currently living. That's the goal.
How exciting. I've just loved this chat, and I can't wish you any more success enough. like with PostGrid, I'll be following in the sidelines, waving my flag. And yeah, I'm really excited for you. I feel you're the first business we've spoken to in this series who is just brand spanking new.
So maybe in a year's time, do this.
I'd love to hear. Yeah, that would be amazing, right?
Yeah, and we can see, like, if it all goes well, we can talk about why it went well, and if it doesn't go well, we can talk about what we could have done differently.
Well, here's the thing, though. Right, it's got to go well. Remember, we have to get past that 18 months, right?
Yes.
So, like, what you know now is how can you forecast and get to those
18? I know.
Yeah,
it's get to those. It's amazing. I'm like, oh, that just makes so much sense. We need many customers paying this amount of money to know that we can get through the next quarter.
I know. When you say it like that, it seems very simple,
yeah,
right?
I'm like, oh, right. Well, we can get that many customers. That's doable.
for me, when I launched my membership, it took it took 6 months before I could forecast properly because I didn't know how long people were going to stick around for. I didn't really know what the cost per acquisition for people coming into the kind of sales funnel was going to be. But as soon as I had good 6 months worth of data, everything just boop, fell into place, right? I know how much it costs to get people in my funnel. I know how much, I know exactly how many people will convert, and I can project probably, I mean, you know, COVID and other kind of natural disasters permitting, I can probably project quite happily for the next 2-3 years, basically. And when you can do that, it just, it becomes what a business is. It's this entity that isn't you. Right. And you just help move it along. Lots of luck, Colette. Tell everyone where they can find you. And obviously just do a quick pitch for everyone, please.
You can find me on Instagram. You just search for PosterGrid. I'll be there. Or you can find me on LinkedIn, Colette Stevenson. I'll probably be the first one. Maybe, or second.
And that's PosterGrid, isn't
Poster-grid, it? PosterGrid, yeah, with an R, as in Instagram. PosterGrid, yeah.
Perfect. All right, thanks, Colette. Hey, it's Vicky back at the end of the episode to talk to you guys who are the end of the show crew. You know who you are. You like listening all the way to the end of podcast episodes for that extra bit of info. And for that, I'm forever in your debt. We love you guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode with Colette as much as we enjoyed recording it. I'm friends with Colette. I've got so much time for her. And I feel like that led to us having a much more open and relaxed chat. And that just means that you guys get to benefit from hearing more about our experiences as well. So if you love this episode, I mean, aside from subscribing, be sure to go and tell us all about what you thought about it over on iTunes. Every time a review is left for us, it just helps us go up the charts that little bit more. And allow more business owners just like you to find this podcast and hear all the value that we give in these episodes for you guys. We have managed to get into the top 10 UK marketing podcast charts a couple of times this year. I've managed to rub shoulders with Amy Porterfield. So, you know, we do all right here. We are a humble little podcast, but your support always helps. And look, we've got so many more great guests coming up in this Behind the Business series who are going to tell you what it's like to launch, run, and deal with the day-to-day running of their businesses online between now and the end of 2021. So again, thanks for hanging out to the end of this episode, and I will see you next week.